All right, we're back. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Angela Keaton. Our show's host is Scott Horton. I'm on the line here today with Sidney Levy. He's an international human rights activist from Jewish Voice for Peace. We're going to discuss both his activism and Jewish Voice for Peace. It's really important that even though we talk about a lot of ideas, I mean, Scott interviews a lot of academics and intellectuals, but it's very, very important we keep in touch with the people on the ground who are actually making the change that will bring about peace in this country. Hi, Sidney.
Hi, thank you for having me here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You've worked for probably almost 20 years now in nonprofits, especially in human rights, with focuses on sexual minorities, and you've worked with immigrants and refugees. Tell me, though, what calls you to do the work for Jewish Voice for Peace?
Well, what is important for me is to make sure that there are both Jews and allies that actually get to speak against what is happening now in Israel, which is against the Israeli occupation. But it's not only against, but it's for something better, for equality, and for Israelis and Palestinians. So as a Jew, it's important for me to speak. As an American, it's important for me to speak on these issues, and that's why I'm doing it. Because we are all related, we are all in some ways complicit in what is happening, because either our names are being used as Jews or our tax dollars are being used as Americans.
Well, JVP, there's two basic issues, right? There's the Israeli West Bank and there's the blockade of the Gaza Strip. Can you give us a sentence or two about each and how Jewish Voice for Peace is distinguished from other groups on these issues?
Well, geographically, there's more. There's the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, and then there's Gaza. They're separated. Gaza is being blockaded. But there's also Palestinians inside of Israel proper. The bottom line is that we want to have an end to the occupation, which is what you call the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza. And we want to make sure that there's equality between Palestinians and Israelis. And really what separates us from other Jewish organizations is that we do start from our Jewish tradition, but then we are guided by human rights principles. And that means that we look at Israelis and Palestinians as equal. We don't say, you know, this is only good for Israel or only good for the United States. It has to be good for Palestinians and Israelis in order to succeed and in order to be morally and ethically viable.
How much do you think the average American actually knows about the specifics of the Israeli occupation?
They do not know enough, because part of the issue is that I think that our opponents try to paint the situation as this is a conflict that has been going on forever and it's intractable. And when they do that, what they are trying to do is just shutting people off from taking action. And actually, it's not a conflict that has been taking off forever, and it's not intractable. We're talking about land, and we're talking about human rights, and we're talking about very simple things. We're talking about giving people the right to live, and grow their families in a way that makes sense for them and their environment. So when you're talking about land, just to put it simply, if you have a house and someone comes and starts taking parts of your house, then you're concerned. And it's not an, age-old conflict. It's someone is taking some of your house. So that's what we're talking about in here. It's how we are going to address the issue of land and human rights.
Well, I want to ask you, what are your specific solutions? Because I understand you don't endorse either a one- or two-state solution.
We don't endorse. Our issue is not endorsing whether one or two states, because that's for them to decide over there. But they cannot decide it together. By them, I mean Israelis and Palestinians, up until the occupation is over. Because actually now, if they sit at the table, they are talking as occupier and occupied. They don't have the kind of relations where they can have these decisions. But our issue is to make sure that the occupation itself, the occupation is a military occupation of the West Bank, is Jerusalem and Gaza, is over. But what you see now is you have Palestinians that are not able to go to school, go to work, because of the checkpoints that surround their communities. You have basically people that have different sets of laws in the West Bank, for example. You have towns that are Jewish-only towns. Those are the settlements that are illegal. And then you have the Palestinian villages that are not allowed to grow, because if you build more houses, they get demolished. So there are all these senses of inequalities that are happening right there that are based on the occupation that they need to end.
What is the citizenship status of someone living in the West Bank?
It depends on whether you are Jewish or not. If you're Jewish, then most likely you're Israeli, basically. And then the laws and the rights of being an Israeli carry with you with your body. If you're a Palestinian that has been living there forever, then you live under different laws. And it really changes because there's also the Palestinian Authority there, but even the Palestinian Authority has to deal with the Israeli military authorities and the occupation. There is no Palestinian state per se. So who gets to enter? Who gets to leave that territory? What products get in? What products get out? All of those things are controlled by Israel. In the West Bank, it's even more stark, obviously, in Gaza, where there is a siege, and people really, really cannot get in and out. And we actually are offering a way in which people can at least offer their protest about what is happening and some way in which they can take action. So we have a specific campaign by which people can hopefully take action in their own schools, in their own communities about what is happening there. So I just would like to make sure that we also address that as well.
Well, what are some of your approaches? I mean, Jewish Voice for Peace has taken, for example, a stance against Caterpillar for selling bulldozers to Israel. Explain a little bit what that's about.
Yeah, so what we're talking here about is corporate responsibility, and part of it comes, first of all, from the fact that the U.S. government is not doing its job. The U.S. government is very, very responsible on what's happening there. We're giving $3 billion a year, and we are, by we, I mean the U.S. government, we haven't been able to stop the injustices of the occupation. So we're looking at civil society. We're looking at people like you and me to say, what is it that we can do? To express our disappointment and to build a movement out of this. And one of the things where we are going and have been going over time is going to corporations and saying it's your responsibility to behave ethically. Caterpillar sells bulldozers to Israel, and those bulldozers get armored, they get weaponized, and they get used specifically to demolish Palestinian homes, to uproot Palestinian trees, not just one tree or two, just like whole orchards, so like the livelihood of entire Palestinian families get, you know, destroyed. And we are talking really about bulldozers that are the size of a house, that are demolishing houses out there. And we're saying that that's unethical and that should stop.
Who would oppose Jewish Voice for Peace? It just seems like it's on the right side of every issue for human justice, for life, for nonviolence. Where does your main opposition come from?
On this issue, there are different levels of opposition. So there are Jews that disagree with us, I think out of their fear. There are also Christian Zionists that disagree with us out of their own ideology. There's also the weapons industry, even though they don't say it vocally. You have to remember that out of the $3 billion in aid that Israel receives from the United States, most of that money, the bulk, gets invested in U.S. armaments. So there you have a powerful lobby as well. And finally, you have sentiments that are prevalent in this country that are anti-Muslim, anti-Arab sentiments that make for an unequal discussion when you're talking about an issue that involves both Jews and Arabs.
Let's step into something a little controversial. You have a blog called Muzzle Watch. Could you talk a little bit about that with our audience?
Yes, basically, we have found that there are so many people that want to talk about the issues as we're doing now, and all of a sudden they get the microphone yanked. You know, they cannot speak. And this happens usually if you go to a conference, for example, and then you get disinvited at the last moment. It happened a few years ago, even with Archbishop Desmond Tutu. He was disinvited to speak at a university here in the United States because he was considered, quote-unquote, anti-Semitic. We know that that's not the case. We know that he is not anti-Semitic. And that he was speaking for human rights and justice. But this level of muzzling that happens often, we are trying to report on it. We're trying to say the only way to, you know, to highlight it is to say this is what's going on, and people, you know, people need to pay attention.
Let me take this next step in more recent events. Where was your position on the Israeli-Gaza conflict? And for some of us, I mean, for me anyway, it was a real eye-opener where I actually took real interest trying to understand that situation for the first time. I apologize for my ignorance. But what happened there in December of 2008?
Israel attacked Gaza. Now, it's true that there were also rockets that were going from Gaza to Sderot. But if you look at the chain of events, of, you know, who did what first, etc., it's clear that at that moment Israel was attacking Gaza under the excuse of the rockets in Sderot.
Okay. Sydney, hold on that one thought. We'll be right back. This is Anti-War Radio.
Yes.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
And welcome back to Anti-War Radio. I'm Angela Keaton. Our host is Scott Horton. This is Anti-War Radio for Liberty News Network and Antiwar.com. On the line with us today is international human rights activist Sidney Levy of Jewish Voices for Peace. And we were talking about Operation Cast Lead. Sidney.
The key here is that there have been many Palestinian civilians that have died as a result of this operation, and that there are many human rights violations and even presumably war crimes that were committed by Israel in this operation. That's an item that was investigated by the United Nations. It was investigated by someone by the name of Goldstone, who actually is not only Jewish, not that that would matter, anyone could investigate this, but also someone that was very, very connected to Israel. I was very disappointed to find out the level of human rights violations and war crimes that were committed by Israel in Gaza. Unfortunately, Israel disavowed all of these, and they said, none of our business. This is not our issue, that they did not want to hear from Goldstone. But the whole world wanted to hear what happened, because we all saw it in our own TV screens.
But the Israelis must have been responding to something.
They respond to, there is a sense in which they are in a, almost in a bunker mentality media, and the same happened with the Gaza flotilla that was a few weeks ago. The whole world was horrified by the way that the Israeli Marines came down from helicopters and eventually got into a boat and killed at least 9 human rights activists that were going to deliver aid supplies to Gaza. But inside of Israel, if you were to make a poll, or if you looked, the large majority of Israeli Jews were in favor of the Gaza flotilla attack.
When weren't they rightfully concerned, though, that there might have been things on that flotilla that could have been used possibly to make maybe rockets? Something's obviously motivating this. And you mentioned the bunker mentality. How is it that they're perceiving these flotillas of human rights activists?
There is a difference between, yes, they are concerned about this, and actually when the goods came and they were inspected, there was nothing there. There was not human rights materials that could have been delivered. The issue is that the activists wanted not only to deliver those materials, but they wanted to break the siege of Gaza. The 1.5 million Palestinians that live in Gaza at this moment, they cannot go in, they cannot go out, they cannot even go to the West Bank or to East Jerusalem. Products don't come in, don't come out. Up until the flotilla attack, basic products like chocolate and coriander could not come into the Gaza Strip. So it was really an open-air prison, and what the flotilla activists wanted was to open that open-air prison, to let people at least breathe a little bit. Israelis are concerned about the fact that, okay, so maybe rockets are going to get in, but frankly, if rockets are getting in, they may be getting in through underground tunnels from Egypt. They're not getting in through human rights activist boats.
What is the demographic makeup of Gaza?
It's 1.5 million Palestinians that are trapped there.
And now, are the majority of these children or people under the age of 16 or so?
Yes. There's a large number of them. Thank you. There's a large number of them that I do not know the exact proportion, but that there are children and youth. And actually, that's something that was highlighted in the Goldstone report, the amount of youth and children that were killed by Israel in the Gaza attack. There's a number of items. You can go one by one by one. I just heard in the break, between these two segments, someone talking about civil disobedience. There's a lot of civil disobedience that's happening in Israel and in the West Bank that is being quashed at this moment by Israel. So it's almost like every day or every week you get a new item of concern or a new crisis that is happening there. But what I want to emphasize is that even though you hear all of this bad news, the solution is not that complicated, and we in this country can take action about it, because it's not, I don't want people to feel paralyzed by all of these bad news that are coming from the Middle East.
Well, what can the average American do, though?
Yeah, so there are certain things that we can do, and certainly, you know, if we could change the policies of our own government, that would be the most important thing. But even the Obama administration has not delivered the goods on Israel and Palestine. They were talking about a settlement freeze, and then they didn't deliver, basically. The settlements continued being built up, and Obama retracted. And so there's not much really happening there, though we need to insist that D.C. needs to get its act together. What we as citizens and as people that live in this country can do is boycott divestments and sanctions. We can look at our own pocketbook, and we can say, where are we buying things, where are we investing things, and we can change the mood of the country. We can build a movement that is larger than what we have now. Even though we have a large movement, we can make it larger, the same way that it happened with the civil rights movement in the South, or with the anti-apartheid movement regarding South Africa. And so we are offering one campaign, one way to do that, which is regarding PIA CREF, which is one of the largest funds in the United States. And we're asking them to divest from companies that profit from the Israeli occupation. And there's a number of possibilities of items to either boycott or divest from. But specifically this one that I am mentioning, we are going to the meeting where this fund meets. They meet once a year next Tuesday in New York. And we're trying to get as many signatures as possible of people that are asking them to divest from the Israeli occupation. So far we have 5,800 signatures, and we want to get by Tuesday to 10,000 signatures.
We were talking a little bit earlier about young people in Gaza. Young people obviously make up the IDF. Can you explain a little bit about your support for Israeli refuseniks?
There's a group called the Sheministim. There's a good number of refusers in Israel. There's a specific group called Sheministim. Sheministim means it's the last year of high school in Israel. And these are people that, out of their awareness of what is happening there, refuse to serve in the Israeli military, because they do not want to serve in an occupying army. Usually what happens is that they go to jail because of their refusal. But they become activists as well, and they try to educate others and to inspire people, both in Israel and outside of Israel, about what is the occupation. So we have very good relations with a good number of them, and they are really an inspiration for us as well.
Where can the average American find out about the Israeli peace movement?
There's a number of organizations. There's not one single organization, but what I would recommend is that a good place to find out what is happening in Israel, and then you'll find, and in Palestine as well, and you'll see a number of the groups. It's in a website that we keep that's called theonlydemocracy.org. And if you go there, you will find some of the elements, some of the items that we complain about. This is not democracy. But you will see in those stories a good number of links to activists and groups in Israel and in Palestine, because there's quite a few.
Do you think that the ADL and AIPAC have been fair in characterizing your organization?
No. Basically, there are organizations, and the ADL and AIPAC, those organizations, would maintain almost that any criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic, and we say that that's not the case. We say that Israel is a country like any other country, and the same way that you could criticize...
All right. Sydney, I'm sorry, we are running out of time. I want to thank you so much.
Okay,
thank you. It's an honor. All right, that was Sydney Levy from Jewish Voice for Peace. I'm Angela Keaton with Anti-War Radio, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you.